Western nations, as we've been hearing, are scrambling to evacuate their citizens from Sudan in East Africa as fighting between rival military factions intensifies. The Department of Foreign Affairs says a consular team with Defence Forces personnel has been on the ground in Djibouti since yesterday. So far, around 50 Irish citizens have been evacuated to Djibouti by a Spanish mission. The deputy head at the Spanish embassy in Ireland, Eduardo Sanchez, described the operation for us.
Two military aircraft managed successfully to land in Sudan. There were armor vehicles that were in one of the planes that managed to reach the residence of the Spanish ambassadors. The Spanish ambassador in Khartoum, where there were a number of Spanish nationals and EU nationals from Poland, Ireland, Italy, and some Latin American countries as well. So the convoy managed to reach without incident the residence of the ambassador and take them back to the airport. There were 70 or so of them. I cannot confirm the number, the exact figure. And then without incident as well, the two aircraft managed to leave the airport at about 11 p.m. local time. And well, the operation goes on because there are still some more Spanish and EU nationals stranded in Khartoum, and we will see how the security situation evolves over the next few hours or days.
Eduardo Sanchez from the Spanish Embassy in Dublin. Well, for the last week, there's been shooting and shelling in the country's capital, Khartoum, resulting in hundreds of deaths. Aid organisations have had to suspend operations. Professor Khalid Mergani from the Sudanese Doctors' Union of Ireland says conditions in hospitals in Sudan are dire.
It's a real crisis. We have 69% of the hospitals in Sudan are offline completely. There is 79 public hospitals and private hospitals were working before this happened. And now 55 of them are not working anymore. They're completely out offline because of this. There is over 230 people killed up to now in the last 10 days. There is no supplies, medical supplies are not reaching the hospitals. Some of the hospitals, the main, and I'm not talking about hospitals in the periphery. I'm talking about hospitals are in the middle of the capital. They had to discharge their sick patients because they could not provide them with food. They couldn't provide them with security. Even the main needs, the basic needs for people, they can't provide it anymore. I was in contact with an ICU unit yesterday, and the staff in the ICU unit, they work continuously for the last 10 days. They're worried about their families, and they wanted to leave the ICU while there is two patients who are sick on ventilators, and that we were looking for somebody to replace them. The problem is you can't get people from point A to point B.
Professor Khalid Mergani, well, we can talk now to Declan Walsh, who's chief Africa correspondent for the New York Times, based in Nairobi. Declan, thank you for taking our call this afternoon. First of all, these evacuations of foreign nationals from Sudan, there seems to have been quite a change in the approach of Western countries to the situation in Sudan over the weekend. There were attempts last week to secure a ceasefire, but those seem to have proved futile, and thus these evacuation operations got underway.
That's right. There were a number of ceasefires announced through the week as the fighting got worse, but frankly, none of them took effect. And it was really only at the weekend when the big Eid al-Fitr, the big annual holiday, was taking place that the ceasefire sort of started to take hold. And a lot of these foreign embassies, which had been making these contingency plans for evacuations, suddenly put them into motion. It started early on Sunday with the Americans when there were helicopters that flew in at night from Djibouti. And then the following morning, a lot of other embassies followed suit, and it started this kind of exodus that's now underway.
How much concern is there, is it possible to assess in Sudan, that the withdrawal of Western countries from Khartoum, the embassies shutting down, could contribute to, if anything, an intensification of the fighting here, that attempts to resolve this peacefully are more remote than ever?
Well, the foreign countries certainly say that they're going to continue with their efforts to try and get a ceasefire. But they do say that the conditions on the ground have gotten so bad that it's no longer safe for their staff to stay there, and that it's time for their citizens to leave. But I think a lot of Sudanese certainly see it as a very ominous sign. They see this as a sign that you know, the failure of these efforts to broker a ceasefire mean that the fighting is probably only going to get worse in the days to come.
The two men who are leading the rival factions, Mohamed Hamdan, Lieutenant General Mohamed Hamdan, who heads up this this paramilitary group, and Army General Al-Burhan, they've throughout all of this been seeking and indeed getting support from neighbouring countries, haven't they? And indeed even from the Russians.
That's right. I mean, this basically goes back to the revolution in Sudan 4 years ago, when people massed in the streets. They threw out Omar Bashir, the dictator of 30 years. And at the time, there was just these, you know, it's easy to forget now, but there were these euphoric scenes in the country, this immense hope that it was going to turn the corner to democracy. But one of the big obstacles was these two generals who controlled the two most powerful armed forces in the country, the regular military and the paramilitary force, the rapid support forces. And then the other factor, as you mentioned, is foreign countries. There are a lot of countries who have different interests in Sudan, who wanted to also control, if you like, the trajectory of the country, whether it would become democratic or not, for their own reasons. And they started to meddle. And I think when this war erupted, we've seen both, you know, the conflict between these two men turn to violence in a really dramatic and destructive way. But we're also seeing, I think, the product of meddling and policies of countries from around the region, who've also been putting their fingers on the scale, or their thumb on the scale rather, and supporting one side or the other. So, for instance, neighboring Egypt to the north made it clear in recent months, as political talks were going on, that it had sided with the army in this fight. The United Arab Emirates, which is increasingly active in this, in the East Africa region, they had been, you know, giving a lot of support to the other side, to General Hamdan. So in the sort of recriminations that are coming out now about how it has come to this, of course, a lot of the focus is on these two individuals and their rivalry, but it's also on the countries in the region and abroad and beyond, including Russia, who've been supporting one side or the other.
Declan Walsh, Chief Africa Correspondent with the New York Times, thank you very much for talking to us.